This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, what a week this has been. Here we are on Thanksgiving, but earlier this week I had celebrated a major milestone with a birthday. And I had so many people who had called, who had written and sent emails, and the messages I have over Facebook, plus just people who had posted on my timeline. It was very gratifying and overwhelming. I was trying to get back to as many as I could with personal thank yous or just to say I liked what they had posted and everything, but my goodness, thank you, thank you, thank you. I am, as I said, overwhelmed with gratitude for all of you, and I thank you for all of your birthday wishes that you had sent my way, and I look forward to being with you guys for many more years to come as well. So thank you for that. And here we are on Thanksgiving, and it's a time in the United States for giving thanks. And there are so many things to be thankful for, and I thank all of you guys for listening to the podcast week after week. As I said, I thank you for all of your birthday wishes, but also for tuning in each week and to listening to these podcasts. And not only that, that tomorrow is going to be what we call Black Friday in the U.S. This is not as well known perhaps in other countries, but it's a time which is the day after our Thanksgiving. And our Thanksgiving always falls on a Thursday, meaning that Friday would be the first day of shopping, supposedly, for all of the holiday to come. That is, all your Christmas and Hanukkah and your Kwanzaa and Festivus and whatever it is that you might be celebrating to purchase your gifts. And so a lot of retailers are out there offering Black Friday specials. Well, this week we have a sponsor who is offering a Black Friday special, and all you have to do is to put in the code Black Friday, and you'll receive a discount on his book, Hiding in the Shadows, The Black Art Book by Chris Stoltz. You'll hear more from him and what this book is about later in the podcast. Well, this week we have a magician who is a scientist, or is that a scientist who is a magician? Jason Latimer actually got into magic because of his interest in science, and he is making a career out of both right now. You may know Jason, of course, as being a world champion with FISM, as well as having won multiple other prizes in the magic convention world, as well as being on Wizard Wars as one of the judges. We are going to get to hear a little bit about how that Jason had gotten involved with magic through science, and how he inspires youth today through his museum programs in California that may soon be reaching into the rest of the United States. So please enjoy our guest today, Jason Latimer, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it gives me a great pleasure to introduce someone who many of you know and have seen perhaps at some magic conventions, because he's won a lot of magic contests at conventions. I know the IBM, perhaps even appeared at FISM. We'll get into that maybe a little bit then as well, as well as on television and elsewhere. And he's got an exciting new project that he's working on with the Impossible Science Project and out in California. I spoke with this gentleman not so long ago when I was out at the Magic Castle and happened to run into him at the Magic Apple there with Brent Garris. And I kind of caught him by surprise and off guard, but we got to be more than just acquaintances, I think, from there. And I am one of his many admirers, and I know you will be after this podcast too. So please welcome Jason Latimer. Hey there, Jason.
Hi, thank you so much, Scott. Yeah, you caught me at the Magic Apple just as I was getting involved in this Impossible Science program. So it's pretty interesting to watch the whole thing progress and be able to chat with you, like, what's going on now. And
yeah, I remember when we were talking, you seemed like you were so excited at the time, and I think you were coming in and you were just had come from the museum and you were going to be heading back to the museum there in LA, and I think you might be picking up a couple things. I didn't want to take too much of your time, but I could tell by the excitement in your voice, like, man, this thing is going to be huge. So
Well,
I sound like Donald Trump. This is going to be huge.
For me, I've been planning something like this for a long time. It took so long to get all the pieces together that when it was finally together, you actually say, oh my God, this actually might work.
kind of surprise yourself. You think, okay, well, I do A, B, and C, then the rest of this just start following, and sure enough, it did, huh?
Yeah, I can only joke around about it. My father, back in the day, built this 18-foot mahogany canoe in the garage out of, like, 3/4-inch pieces of mahogany. So, and it was huge. I thought it was going to start raining for 40 days.
Was his name Noah?
This huge undertaking. It took years to put together. And so when it actually went into the river and it floated, all of us were looking at each other like, whoa, that actually worked. That was actually possible.
That's funny.
And he did that a number of times. He did that with, like, he built a race car in the garage. He built everything. You know, we were all a little nervous when he slipped into the garage. It's kind of funny because not much has changed. But this project has been years in the making. And in the last 2 years that I've been involved with the Fleet Science Center and now other science centers, it's just grown dramatically. It's really exciting to see so many people get inspired by education.
Where's the Fleet Center, the Fleet Science Center in relation, let's say, to the Magic Castle? A lot of people know where the castle is located.
Oh, well, the Fleet Science Center is down in San Diego. It's in, so it's about 2.5 hours south of Magic Castle. It's in an iconic place called called Balboa Park in San Diego. And the Fleet Science Center is San Diego's science center. It's the first IMAX dome planetarium in all science centers, and every science center in the world's modeled after it. So, if you've ever seen an IMAX planetarium in a science center, that's because of the Fleet. It's also the home of OmniMax, when it first did doing wraparound projections.
Right.
That started.
Interesting. Do you live in the San Diego area then?
No, I live in Calabasas, 2.5 hours north.
Okay.
And so when I first came up with the idea, it was, let's open in a science center, and I was only going to do it for 8 weekends, 6 shows every weekend, 8 weekends. And that went on for almost 2 years, a little over 18 months with the show running every single weekend.
Was that just because you had so many people kept coming back to the show, or that you kept having sellout theater?
It was a huge success, and the Science Center's attendance went up, and everybody's attendance, all the numbers across the board went up, and people were writing in on how inspired they were, because I took, I rewrote my show. It's not a normal show. Every illusion I've done is now represents a different field of science when you play that card, and everybody realizes that the laser trick is actually physics, and the shaping water is chemistry, and the puzzle trick was mathematics, and the clear cups and balls is psychology. You start to realize that there's a theme aside from the magic tricks, and that it becomes the ultimate the ultimate kind of like science experience that gets you curious in an academic environment, and it's meant to do that.
Well, those things that you just mentioned right there were part of your award-winning act. And I mentioned earlier that you'd won the IBM contest on the international level. What other magic contests had you competed in and won?
Well, I've won, I joke around, I pseudo-retired years ago. But
yeah, I know. We haven't seen you around in a while.
FISM Grand Prix World Champion. I won the close-up. I won invention at FISM 2. And then I won the close-up, then the invention, and then the Grand Prix. And then I won the a lot of little smaller awards. And then I came out of pseudo-retirement to go compete on The Magicians with the BBC One. I say pseudo-retirement because after the World Championships, I didn't want to lose.
Yeah. What else do you have to prove at that point, you know?
I won 17 contests in a row, and then I was like, you know what? I really don't want to lose. I want to be world champion magic, then second. And so I stopped. I went back to college, got degrees, and then went. And then after years, I literally had the BBC One show up on my doorstep because everyone told them I wasn't going to say yes. And then I had like a little mutiny on my business team, and they literally came over here and told me what they wanted to do. And then I went back out to season 2 of The Magicians, and it was, I joke around, it was one American against only British acts in Britain where the British public votes. And I won that one. So that was really cool. And then that's it. Never doing it anymore. I don't even use hair gel anymore. My hair is under so much stress, it just spikes on its own.
That's great.
it's just, no, I don't want to do this ever anymore. And then I got the opportunity to be the judge on Wizard Wars with Penn and Teller.
Yeah, I remember.
And that was just an awesome experience. And I just think I didn't get into Magic to be in competitions, but they're really good for people that are not magicians to understand that you're at least at a somebody's acknowledged that you'll be good. Somebody's acknowledged if you're being booked, it's good to at least have some type of credit rather than the last person. But on the same thing, it depends what you want out of Magic. So I don't even think competitions are necessary.
Mm-hmm. But wouldn't you encourage young people perhaps to enter contests?
Well, you know what? There's a handful of reasons. I don't suggest. Billy McComb and I used to talk a lot about it, and Billy and even Diana Zimmerman were really influential in where I've gone with the competition scene. And it was mainly, it's funny because it comes from two supporters that are greatly supportive of the junior program.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And they said, it's not really worth it to win a junior competition. Because
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be junior. You'll grow out of being a junior faster than you'll be anything else. So you really don't want to go after the junior awards because you don't want to be 50 saying I won the junior achievement award. But if you win the world championships, that title is going to sit with you for the rest of your life. So when you say the young magicians, well, yeah, but I wouldn't go after the junior awards under 21. I would go for professional ones. However, that being said, and this is honest truth of it, there's no real advantage to competitions if you're going to try to stay professional, because other than being booked on a gig, when it comes down to it, the people that have a lot to lose, the really big names, they're not going to be in that competition.
That's true, unless there's a lot of money at stake.
Maybe. I have a number that would get me back in competition.
Okay. I'm sure we all do. But that's one of the things that some of the organizations have started to do is to offer not just a trophy, but actually some cash awards in hopes of bringing some of the professionals into the competition.
Right. And I think that's a better way to do it, like a prize at the end. But you also need now the new way to do it is a guarantee for your involvement, because you are taking all the risk. Unless you're going in there for your own, justification of why you need to do this.
You try to prove something to somebody or...
Yeah. If you need to prove something to somebody or prove something to yourself, then I'm not going to get in your way to go do your thing. But for me, I've really kind of gotten back to my roots of that wasn't the game plan.
Right.
I got a little distracted when I was younger, and now I'm focused.
Well, I think, again, for the youth to get involved, I have always been a proponent of trying to get them into contests because I believe that it gives them self-confidence, the ability to be on stage. It does a lot of things while they're in their formative years as opposed to entering the contest after they're 18 when they're more of a senior. I mean, I understand what you're saying as far as, you know, that you don't want to go back and say, well, I was a junior winner in this particular contest or whatever when you're 35 years old or something. But I think that you should continue into that. But I don't think that you're trying to discourage young people from entering contests.
Here's... The difference is I had a small advantage of being a part of the junior program at the Magic Castle.
That big advantage.
So we get trained to compete and perform professionally live. So the competition angle of just learning how to perform in front of people, we wouldn't try that out in a contest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to come off negative contest. Contests do a lot of great things. They'll hone you in with your skill. They'll hone you in with your performance. Your score sheets will actually tell you what you're doing wrong. Like, you can have a rainbow collage up there, but you won't be branded until you start figuring out your color scheme, your style.
Good point.
You start to realize all the routining, how...
it's better to learn that while you're young also.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not discouraging people from performing or learning how to be better. I'm just saying that there's more than one way to become a professional magician. And the contests are great. Just remember... you don't have to, if you don't win, you don't have to be discouraged by it. But it's actually, if you do win, you start to get more stressed out about it. And I was very lucky that the people that should have won didn't show up. Yeah. Thank God I was so good. I was, you know, sending everybody like the chicken pox or something. I don't know.
I've heard people say that they pick and choose their magic conventions thinking, okay, first of all, how many people are registered for this? Okay, it's a small registration. I think I got a better chance at this one, you know. So, I'm not going to go to the big ones where I can get embarrassed and lose to somebody.
But you have to be prepared. Like when you get to the FISM, mm-hmm. I mean, if you really want to see what the contest world is like, FISM is it.
How does that differ? I mean, I've been to several FISMs just as a spectator. How does that differ as a contestant, let's say, from the contest that you won that qualified you to attend and perform at FISM or compete at FISM? Is it a different level of nervousness, I guess, on an international level?
And well, for me, I was in college when I did it. So, you know, I was living off Top Ramen and paying to go fly overseas to go. Everybody jokes around. To this day, there are some pretty funny stories that came out of FISM because I was, it brings me back to real humble beginnings. I was dirt broke. I was putting myself through college and I had told everybody that I was going to go to FISM and you have to pay to participate. You have to pay to compete. And sure. And you also have to be out there for a week.
So just because that you're invited to compete, that doesn't mean it's free. I mean, aside from all the expenses traveling overseas and to in lodging and everything, but you also have to pay a registration fee?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And you have okay. And well, at least I did. At least yeah. we'll get it from him. But I was lucky enough that the junior being a member of the junior junior program of the Magic Castle, and back then with the Magic Castle and the Siegfried and Roy Award, I won the Sarmodi Award from mm-hmm. Siegfried and Roy, and then I put that money toward it too. But the other thing is, I was just a little crazy man on my own, working in the garage and seeing how I was going to do this. But one of the best thing about it was, I told my landlord at college that I was just like, I'm going to go compete in the World Championships of Magic, and his first question was, wait, there's actual world championships in Magic?
Yeah, this is not just a little birthday party thing. You mean there are more people in the world who will recognize you for this?
he did the sweetest thing, and we became the best of friends of all time because he said, he's like, I'll tell you what, why don't you just leave? I told him I can't afford to stay. I was dirt broke, and I couldn't afford to stay in his house while I go away to work for the summer and go overseas and take time off because I was raising money for college. And he just straight up said, leave your stuff, good luck, have fun, don't worry about this, he'll be here for you when you get back. And that happened with a lot of people helping me out, and I was developing stuff for the World Championships that kind of cost me a lot more money than just the enrollment or I guess the fee to participate.
Right.
I was developing stuff that had a minimum run capability. So like I buy 1,000 cups. It didn't come out right. Buy another 1,000 cups. Now I've got furniture made in cup boxes. It's one of some of my longtime friends joke around now because, you know, now I've got a few more toys, but it's come a long way from box, cloth, lamp. box, cloth. Complete piece of plywood for table. I had more cups than I had furniture. And so cup boxes. And, but yeah, and anyway, so to make a long story longer, basically, it's when you're at that age, it's a big commitment. It's a real thing. And I think taking that level seriously is great for new upcoming magicians.
Right.
Taking that seriously. as far as like why is FISM different? The stress level is different. No one's there to goof around. No one's there to say, I hope I traveled across the world.
Yeah.
To represent a country.
Yeah.
Be okay.
Yeah, I just hope I don't suck. It's like, you're not at that point. You're there to win. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Everybody's there because they feel they could be there. And that's a difference. No one's looked at the attendance of FISM and says, I hope this is less attendance so I have a better chance. Everybody's there going, wow. Like, and it's scary backstage. You're worried about your stuff working. I built it, so I was very stressed that it was going to work.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I think that would be just the opposite. The fact that you had built it, you had confidence in that, as opposed to having something that was built by somebody else or a prop off the shelf or something that you're thinking, okay, I've used this a bunch of times. I wonder if maybe I should have gotten a new prop or I hadn't worked it. Anyhow, I would think the fact that they were all built by you, you'd have more confidence in that.
Well, you don't know my skill level in building.
I'm assuming you're a master carpenter, you know?
No, I'm just joking around. I think... Actually, here's the advantage. Here's the best advice I could give anybody in competition. And this has to do with in magic or business in general. Be the best of one. Mm-hmm. That's it. Be the best of one. If you're the only one in the world that does it, you're going to be the best in the world at it. And there's no competition for pure originality. There's no way. I may be okay at shaping water, but I'm the only individual shaping water right now, so I'll be the best at shaping water.
Yeah.
Rolling it into an object and popping it. So when I look at illusions, I look at, am I interested in being a part of this? Because I don't know who else is going to be doing this. Who else was not doing this? And when you go into a competition, like when I came up to Clear Cups and Balls, I did it because nobody was really doing it like this. It was, you've been written off as a joke or a
Right, like Penn and Teller
exposure
or something.
But could you really make it magical? I mean, could you make a submarine with a screen door magical? And that was the idea going into it. And so if you want to win a competition, do something that's never been seen before. Otherwise, you're going to be completely on the list of where did you rank compared to the first time you saw it. That's also how I approach business when I go into different fields. I go, has this ever been done before? Why has it never been done before? And like more along the lines of, can I solve those problems? Because if you can, then you're looking at very little competition in business
right,
in certain things.
I want to transition really into something along the line of what we were just talking about with the performances for a contest and about how that or when it was that you started realizing that this is science. I mean, rather that it had an application to science.
Oh, well, that's actually way before the competitions, actually. I got into magic when I was a kid, and I say it now more in my keynote speaking that the first time I saw Beyond My Answers, I was 9, in a magic show. And the way
Beyond Your Answers.
Yes. It was the first time I realized I didn't know everything.
Yeah.
I saw a magic show. I was straggly haired, missing a couple teeth, due to a recently overestimated flight plan. Out of trees, making cardboard wings, and I was trying to figure out the idea of flight. And I went to a magic show, and I saw this woman fly high up in the sky, and I just sat there thinking, how do they have different rules than the rest of us? Eventually, that got modified into, what do they know that I don't? At the time, I was really just talking about The Secret in my head. I just didn't really understand the concept of they know something I don't.
Right.
But it was really like, why has everyone been lying to me? Because they said it wasn't possible, and now I've seen this. And I was inspired by what I didn't know. And that is exactly how I took it. I went into education and science with this veracity to just want to learn what I didn't know. Mm-hmm. Because my curiosity was so ignited by the art of magic. And then I started looking at magic tricks more along the difference of understanding, difference in how the world works. This is much more advanced. As I got older, the concept became much.
Right.
I went into applied sciences, applied chemistry, applied physics, mathematics. I love mathematics. It's very logical for me. I get that. And so everything's rooted in math. But then the idea was, anything you don't understand will be magic. Anything you do understand will be more comfortable. And we say science, but I'm not even 100% sure that's the right word for it. Because anything you don't understand will be magic. And
true.
And everybody resorts to the Arthur C. Clarke quote, but I don't think that's actually complete.
That was what I was just going to say, it seems like, yeah.
I don't think it's complete, because we could be standing on a bend of a river, right? Mm-hmm. And we could be kind of scratching our heads trying to get across the river. And then you turn around, and I'm no longer next to you, and I'm on the other side of the river. And you'll say, oh my gosh, that's magic. but I knew there was a bridge around the bend of the river.
Right.
I knew something you didn't. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a sufficiently advanced technology. I just knew something you didn't know.
Yeah.
And that is where magic starts to take place, when there's a difference in understanding of the situation.
So it's knowing something that somebody else doesn't know?
Well, that's usually where the secret part comes from.
Okay.
but the idea is, it doesn't have to be a two-party thing. We can stare at the cosmos and say magic because we don't know the other side of that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be, I know something you don't. That's the relationship between magician and non-magician. But anything we don't understand or can't fathom or don't understand how it would work would be considered magic. Like if somebody found the cure to the next disease, or somebody finds the technology that the world needs but doesn't have, that will be magic to us because we didn't know it was possible.
How does that differ from puzzles?
It doesn't, except there's the person who created the puzzle and the person that did create the puzzle. And the person that did create the puzzle and the person that's doing the puzzle.
Right.
It's just, for me, that's the way I've always approached magic, and I've always approached education the same way.
Okay.
So when you ask about the relationship to science and magic, my education came from being inspired by magic, and now I used what I learned to apply in magic, and now I'm doubling back with the magic to apply in education, and that's exactly where I am in science centers, doing exactly what happened to me by chance, but purposely engaging people in it in their own lives.
So when you said that you had developed the magic tricks, they were things based upon science that you said, okay, well, I can bend light and I can use these mirrors or lenses or whatever to do it, or I can command water or whatever. That
right.
It was something that was, again, rooted in science.
Right. If I knew something, an application of science that most people wouldn't know, or a combination of facts of science that most people don't put together, that combination becomes magical to a person that doesn't know that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I joke around these days. I'm probably the only magician I know of that likes to say I have no superpowers whatsoever. I know I don't. I'm very capable. At least I don't think I do. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And that way, all the students in the Impossible Science Initiative and programs in the science centers, they get it. They get like, okay, so you're saying you know something I don't. And you know it because of these fields.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't tell them how it works. I just tell them the field they need to study in order to figure it out.
Okay.
And remind them that don't forget your question could be different than mine, and therefore you might have a better answer than mine. So you might come up with your own way, but your way might be better than mine.
And do you find that students are more interested in science today than when you were younger? In other words, are they interested in exploring the mysterious, or do they just accept things?
In the Impossible Science Program or outside the Impossible?
Outside the Impossible Science Program. I'm talking about, I think, in general.
That's a very good question. And not to sound negative, but there's a real reason why I'm doing this. We're in a new situation right now as a society. Anybody who's 25 or older, maybe even a little bit older than that, we saw the birth of the internet. We can wrap our heads around that. We know what it meant to go to a library. That's a building that has books in it for everybody that's listening, by the way. but more importantly, we saw the walls of the library. We knew limited information. We knew what that meant. We knew what it meant that the book was checked out or not available or mm-hmm. in a different library. Education was driven by search out those answers and get report back to us. The accessibility to information right now is undermining wonder. And what's happened is people search a question, get an answer, and move on.
Right.
When was the last time you looked at the references of where the site was done? And more importantly, when was the last time you checked out page 3 or page 4? Mm-hmm. I joke around, the secret to the universe is on page 6, but nobody ever makes it. But the accessibility to information has really stop people from asking more questions.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is when you take a moment to remind the future generation, we gave the internet those answers.
True.
All of a sudden they go, wait a second. I go, yeah, behind the answer you just read was a person that put it there. All
right? Right.
And now we're in a situation where the most popular one wins. The most clicks, the most views.
Goes up the highest in the rankings.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. When was the last time a revolutionary idea starts off popular?
None. I can't think of any. Of course not.
If the wrong one gets up there, we reinforce it by every time we click on it because it's in first.
That's all Wikipedia is about, I think.
Well, Wikipedia is a open source type of situation, but we should be very careful about our answers in the age of information, because if something were to get popular, but a better idea came along, how does that better idea beat the old idea? Because it needs to be popular to get past it. Now, there's a lot of people out there in SEO search engines and trying to figure out how to solve this algorithm and problem. But more importantly, just the thought process for the future generation of education. They really need to understand, just because we can't see the walls of the library anymore doesn't mean every answer is there. And we really want to inspire the next year and the next technology. We need to remind people how to wonder. We need to show people how to see beyond their answers.
And how do you do that?
You take a magician and you make him the curator of a science center.
and put it in San Diego.
well, now I'm involved. Now I'm the curator of Impossible Science for Discovery Cube LA, Columbia Memorial Space Center in Downey, the Discovery Cube in Orange County, and the Fleet Science Center in San Diego.
All right, well, here we are getting ready to go into Black Friday, which will be tomorrow, I guess, actually, since this broadcast is going out on Thursday morning, and tomorrow's Black Friday, which means it's one of the busiest shopping days of the year. That is, the Christmas season is coming, and a lot of people put things on sale, and now is the time to look at buying something for the holiday season. And in that regard, a lot of magicians, of course, are looking for what is the newest thing and the best thing. What is it that I need on my shopping list for this Christmas season? So this way that you can hand your significant other, your Christmas list, your wish list for your magic things. And we've got a suggestion for you over here on this podcast. And I've got with me right now the author of this book, and the title of the book, first of all, is called Black Art Techniques. I'm sorry, it's called Hiding in the Shadow, the Black Art Book. It's written by Chris Stoltz, and I've got Chris with me now. Hi there, Chris.
Hi, Scott.
So the book is called, it's about black art. It sounds like it's mainly like illusion design or how to use black art. Or tell me a little bit about what the book is about.
Yeah, so the book was written for black art for the stage. And so it goes through four, well, we'll call it three main sections. So methods and concepts, lighting theory. There's a ton of lighting in this book. So a lot of black art is just about how to light or not light your black art.
That's perhaps the most important thing, I think, you know, in black art, certainly, is having it lit properly. Otherwise, it's just you expose everything.
Yeah, and it's one of the biggest reasons why magicians are kind of afraid of black art in many ways is there's this misconception that you've got to, you know, take away every possible bit of light to come from any doorway in the room sort of thing. And it's just not true. So, and then there are 10 illusions in the book as well.
I stepped on you. You'd also said there's something about easy lighting setups or something.
Yeah. There are a series of easy lighting setups. So some simple diagrams, something you can hand over to a lighting designer and say, give me this. And it works pretty well.
Right. Now, with the illusions in there, so it tells you about how to build these. I mean, are there blueprints in there, or are they – tell me something about that.
Yeah, they're not so much architectural blueprints. They're more concepts, but it's got some dimensions and such in there so that you can get started. Probably not too far off of an Osborne, perhaps not quite as detailed, but you've got everything you need to build them. A couple of my favorite illusions are in there. Silverchair, one of the ones I'm most known for, is actually there for the first time in 10 years, finally published, and that finishes off the book.
And that was what I was going to ask you also, as far as the originality of these. These are things that are concepts from your own creation?
Yeah. Most of them have been performed, all of them have been performed by somebody, with the exception of one that's in there as more of a teaching concept, and most of them have been performed by me at some point in my career.
So they're definitely time-tested and commercial and have been used and are proven, audience-tested and proven.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, great. Now, the cost of the book and how they can find this.
Yeah, so the book is available in both hardcover and softcover. Mm-hmm. So this is Canadian dollars, so it's actually cheaper for you if you're in the U.S., but it's $49.95 for the soft, $59.95 for the hardcover. But for Black Friday weekend, if you use the promo code Black Friday, you'll be getting 15% off your cart.
Wow. So where do they go to purchase this? And I assume that if you're buying this in a country outside of Canada, that it automatically adjusts for whatever that your currency is, whether it's a euro or pound or American dollar or whatever.
Yeah. It goes through PayPal, so they do the magic. Oh. Mm-hmm. You can get it at Stoltz Productions website, but I set up an easy URL. So if you go to blackartbook.com, it'll take you right to it.
Blackartbook.com. And we'll have also a link to that on themagicwordpodcast.com, so you can click on that and it will take you directly there as well to make the purchase. That sounds great. What a deal.
Yeah. It's we're getting great reviews. A lot of big names are loving the book, so I hope everybody gets their hands on it and enjoys it.
Very good. Well, congratulations, and I think it sounds like just a wonderful book for the stage illusionists, and also not just for them. I imagine there are a lot of things that could apply to the parlor or even maybe the close-up things.
Yeah, it's all general concepts that you can use in a lot of different environments.
That sounds great. Well, thank you very much, Chris, and good luck with the book. And again, I encourage you guys to go and check it out, and you can learn more about it there through the website.
Thanks, Scott.
Were these things, I guess, after they saw the first one, then did you take it to them, or did they, I mean, old museums talk with each other, and they said, what kind of good ideas or exhibits do you have, and then they shared it, or what?
I am on a one-man running down the coast with a flag telling people we are going to change the direction of education and we're going to do it this way.
Do you think that's something that could be carried on throughout the United States and indeed the world eventually?
Absolutely.
And you could actually train other magicians to do this in their own cities?
Before we get to the other magicians part, absolutely it's scalable because it's not just a show. Mm-hmm. It's a curriculum. I've taken the time, now I have 70 experiments that are designed to inspire people to ask questions based on invisibility, levitation, mind control, animation, transformation. These all sound familiar because magicians like, he's going down magic topics.
Right.
Well, I've also branched into science fiction, bionics, artificial intelligence. And what happens is you learn the science behind how you could actually do it. So 7-year-olds are running around learning Bernoulli's principle, and they're learning about a Magnus effect for levitation, and they're learning about quantum locking at 7 years old because we're teaching them in the terminology they understand.
Yeah.
They're going to levitation class. They're going to invisibility. They're learning about refractive index. They're learning about all these things, not in physics. Yes, they are learning physics, but they're learning it with the words they know and the reason why they need to learn this. And so we've turned science centers into a place of inspiration rather than a place of answers. A place that gets the conversation started about what they don't know.
Yeah.
And so when you ask, is it scalable? Absolutely. As of right now, well, the first year and a half, I was at the Fleet Science Center. In the last 7-8 months, we've grown to seasonal locations in the L.A. Downey Orange County. And the reason they're seasonal is because there's only one of me and I've got a small team.
Mm-hmm.
The first year was, does it work? This year was, let's expand. Next year will be about reinforcing the expansion so that it is more self-sustaining, the 2017. And by 2017, 2018, we're going to build it more into a platform with a couple more surprises I have coming that comes out in January 2018. But the idea behind all of it is, yes, we can do this. We are fully capable of inspiring wonder, but we have to take magic beyond a card trick, and we have to take magic beyond street magic. Not that these are bad. They're great to inspire people, but if we waste this sense of wonder on a trick when it has a potential of making a real difference right now, everybody can do it for fun. I'm out there to try to see if I can, in my lifetime, to see if I can really make a difference.
And your belief, I guess, is just kind of one person at a time. I assume you have classrooms that come in. So
right now we have a little under 50,000 students, all involved. And I'm not doing it classroom by classroom. I'm teaching facilities that can do over 1,000 people a day if they have the right tools to run these labs and these festivals. The festival is all our flagship that's got anywhere from 30 to 70 experiments, but it takes a huge staff to put it on. The labs are a dozen of my favorite experiments, but they're duplicates so that it takes one person that can handle multiple groups at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the manpower drops dramatically. So that one's easier for science centers to digest, just to see what it does. And then on top of that, we have the live show that has the same theme, which is my level of impossible science graded in there. So kids get to realize their impossible science is just where they understand. So the funniest thing is we got parents starting to ask, actually, we got adults starting to ask, do we need to have kids? Do we need to borrow?
Yeah.
The greatest part about impossible science labs and festivals is they're not tricks. And when I say we're going to turn something invisible, parents go, oh, wait, really? Is there?
You can do that?
Yeah. That's really going to happen? I'm like, yeah, it's not going to be a trick. You're going to learn about refractive index. I'm going to show you how to turn something invisible with the stuff you can find in the kitchen.
Yeah, wow. Now, are these things also that you teach the teachers so they can go back and use this, or do you have a workbook or curriculum for them?
We're now in the process of turning the 70 experiments into workbooks. We keep going back and forth at because it's unprecedented. It's never been done before. When's the right time to teach a 7-year-old quantum mechanics?
Yeah. When he turns 8 and a half, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, the funniest thing about it is I like to sit as a fly on the wall and see, once these experiments start going and the room gets filled with all these people, I'm not at every experiment. I walk around just watching the kids do it, and I'm there to do more experience with them, and then on the hour, maybe I might do something, but I'm not necessarily there every day. I really think my impact is to try to get the most people doing it. But being a fly on the wall, it's really interesting. I had a great time listening to these two girls try to figure out flight. And they're 9 years old. They've been now with us since the very beginning, and their parents write in to tell me how they're doing. They're best of friends. And they came to the show about 4 or 5 times, and now they're on pursuit to try to find a new way to make something fly, because they're convinced they can ask a question that's never been asked before, and they'll find a new way to make something fly. Now, these 9-year-olds have contacted universities about quantum locking. They now understand Bernoulli's principle, Magnus effect. They know the difference between why a sphere floats in Bernoulli's principle versus a cube. They're starting to, these two little girls are know more probably about flight than most adults. And they've done it because they're trying to figure out if they could come up with a question that no one's ever asked before. And that's real education comes from. And that's why we've nicknamed it Education Through Curiosity. Igniting somebody to take it upon themselves to ask more questions, to grow and to learn and see what is possible. Because nobody knows. Nobody knows what is possible. No one was given a rule book. Every rule book we've had, we gave to ourselves. And so you got to learn to see beyond your answers. And that's why magic needs to be in education. The concept of magic.
Right.
Doesn't have to be a trick.
Doesn't have to be a trick, yeah. So right now, this is just you and the teachers and the students. And it's really kind of a one-man operation.
No, not really. I can't take credit for that. It's definitely more than just a one-man operation. It started at the Fleet Science Center with me being crazy, wanting to do something in the Science Center. The CEO of the Science Center, Stephen Snyder, who used to be the curator of the Franklin in Philadelphia, is now the CEO of this one. He got it instantly, and he realized the value it could have to turning the Fleet Science Center into this direction.
Right.
Then what happens, I turn to my best guys I've worked with over the last probably 10 years plus in my illusion design and my company over LFX, and I just told them, this is the direction I'm going. And we started a new group together and called Wonder First, and everybody has kids except for me. And I showed them exactly the game plan of how I plan to do this that spans years. And the idea was, let's start a company so that we all have skin in the game, so we're going to really work hard at this. And these guys are putting in so many hours. Special thanks to Dustin Gould, Daniel Urbach. Without those guys, that's my director and my producer and media. But also, on the other hand, Daniel does all our graphics, animation, and artwork. Mm-hmm. And then I have Paul Cantor, who's doing all of our background science checks, because I can research so much. And then I've contacted all my old physics, all my old professors from UC Santa Barbara, my old teachers. It's a crazy amount of work to pull this off.
Yeah.
Because you need to have, I joke around, you need to have two things, which is the brains to pull it off, but also just be dumb enough to go for it.
Smart enough yet stupid enough.
But the amount of time and effort, if you don't have a lot of time, you got to make it up with it in effort. And so if you get a lot of people working together, you can really make a difference. And
right.
It just had to be, somebody had to just be the architect of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
again, dreaming something that no one else has dreamt of.
Yeah, but this one's a little different because, yeah, it's never been done before. But more importantly, it has to be done.
Yeah.
This one has to be done. This is something we need to do.
Well, again, that goes back to what I was asking about students today, of whether they have an interest in science. It seems like that we're trying to get people interested in science and mathematics that are two core but fundamental things that should be part of our nature and being. But it seems now people have found easy ways around science. As you said earlier, just, you know, if you got a question, Google it. It's not like going to the library, researching it, looking up the references and going into detail and finding out everything. Things seem to be so much easier today for us to accomplish. And so it sounds like what you're doing with this program is trying to teach people the cognitive process.
Well, here's a great analogy. If we live by our answers, there's nothing wrong with that. We could have gone on perfectly fine thinking the Earth was flat.
Mm-hmm.
We still would have discovered flight. I mean, we will keep discovering things if we don't know one direction. But if we want to find the next cure, if we want to find the next technology, if we want to exceed and see what's over the horizon, we're going to need individuals that can challenge the answers they have.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need to inspire people to want to know why couldn't they do it. The whys, the hows, the why nots.
Yeah.
We need to nurture that. And so where I think education falls short today is we've spent countless years developing, here's a question, give me the answer, to reinforce education. But now, because of the accessibility, we should be nurturing these individuals to ask questions in the STEM, but more in the STEAM movement, because it's not just science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. We do need the dreamers, the artists, the ones that go out there and say, why couldn't we do this crazy idea? And then know where they could go to find the answer. But more importantly, we need to inspire individuals to ask questions. Otherwise, we can go fine with answers.
Mm-hmm.
But if we want to change things, we're going to need some questions.
Well, where do you think this whole thing is going or will end up? What's the future? Let's say, the Impossible Science program that you're doing, that as far as where do you see this 1, 2, 5, 10 years down the road? And what impact will it have had in the lives of tomorrow's engineers?
Well,
what are you hoping for?
Impossible Science is growing pretty fast, and I'd like to develop it, whether it's Impossible Science or under a different name. I've already been working with the Wyoming Department of Education, and I'm getting more and more involved actually in Texas. I went out there with the West Texas STEM educators and then go back out there in the beginning of November to work with the Science Teachers Association of Texas.
Whereabouts? You say West Texas, is that Midland?
It was in Abilene, I believe.
Yeah, Abilene, okay.
Am I pronouncing it right?
Yes, correct.
In Abilene, and then we went out there for their conference earlier this year, and then beginning of November I'll be in San Antonio explaining to the Science Teachers Association of Texas about the direction of education through curiosity. It doesn't have to be impossible science. It just, we need more people to recognize the importance of wonder and curiosity in education.
Right.
So impossible science is just worked because it needed to be proved. I needed to prove that this is the way to, it works.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to keep it calling impossible science, that's fine. If they don't, that's fine too. But we do need to, somebody and individuals to say, oh, I get it. The way we were doing it may not be the best way to do it now.
But are you hoping that ultimately this is something gets taken into the classroom?
Yes, absolutely. I gave it to free for I gave it to free to anybody who wants to do
mm-hmm.
it. In the classrooms, it's too small of numbers for me to
sure. It's not practical.
It's not to go after 30 kids at a time. It's not great.
Right.
But it doesn't mean it's not important. It's just if they want to do it, contact me. I'll be happy to set them up. Happy to get them to mm-hmm. do what they're doing. But what I'm looking for are institutions that are moving thousands of people a day,
mm-hmm.
at least 1,000 a day, events that involve 3,000 to 5,000 people for festivals, longer runs for the stage show. The Discovery Cube Orange County just built a new theater. We're now working on Impossible Science. The live show is going to be in there in July next year for like 15, 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Downey is making April the city of STEM. So we've got the Columbia Memorial Space Center redoing their entire curriculum for April, and getting people excited about science, building up to the Impossible Science Festival,
right.
where we had thousands of people show up this year. And they only do a few hundred people a day. We had thousands of people show up at the end, and no one knew what to do anything. We were making stuff out of the like, trash cans. And
yeah.
We were sending people to Home Depot. We're like, buy more.
Wow.
And I'm now working with cities and city officials on the direction of getting Impossible Science into more of a festival for the city.
Nice.
And so where am I seeing this going? Well, we have a waiting list on science centers until February 2018. So
they all want your program.
Yeah, already. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm mainly focusing on Southern California right now because mm-hmm. I need to stay within driving distance, because in the first steps, it's the hardest to get to every location to make sure everything's done on the best level I can give it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm working with places out, multi-states, all adjacent. So OMSI, Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, them and I, they've come down to San Diego and checked it out. And we've been working with them about how illusions and this idea of, can we create wonder in an academic environment?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be impossible science, but this is the direction I envision education just shifting to this direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care if it's my program or not.
So right.
It's like, where's it going? I'm going to try to inspire as many people as I can in my lifetime to be curious and wonder. And if they ask a question that makes a difference, then I feel like all of this is worth it.
Wow. That's a very altruistic attitude. You've got a kind heart.
Cool. I lucked out with the way things played out when I was younger. So now I just don't want to spend my entire I did not spend my entire life studying various fields of applied science. I did not work this hard to run down the street and say, I'm just going to trick somebody.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you need to make a difference.
All my life doing this just to say, nah, neener, neener.
Yeah, yeah. Well, many years ago, I was, before I had children, and I was involved as a scoutmaster, and I ran for and had won the school. You were a scoutmaster, too?
No, I'm an Eagle Scout.
Well, congratulations. That's good for you. I didn't quite make it that far. But I also ran for and won a slot on the school board, again, even though I didn't have children. But my feeling has been and has always remained that you should give back to the community. You know, I didn't want to wait until I was 80 years old and look back and say, I wish I would have tried this, or I would have or could have done this or that. I'd rather jump in and try it and find out, is that something I like? Have I contributed? Have I left the world a better place by what I have contributed or what I have offered? Was it good or bad? Do I want to continue to do that or try something else? But at least I've done that, as opposed to saying, I wonder if sometime later, you know.
Right.
So I think it's important what you're doing is jumping in there and actually making a huge difference, you know, that is, again, not something that's self-serving, but something that you're looking for the greater good.
Well,
so good for you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's very rewarding. I worked in casinos for years, and I worked in a lot of events, doing a lot of shows and renting theaters and stuff like that. And nothing's as rewarding as mm-hmm. watching this
children
thing
grow and learn.
Yeah, and that one moment, and I constantly hire camera crews to walk through the Science Center and film these moments, because we use them as proof, and we'll start releasing that after this Comic-Con, this series ends. I'll start mm-hmm. releasing what we've been doing in the Science Centers.
Well, I want to make sure you tell me about those links, because I want to post some of those on the website. So people who are listening to this podcast, if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there will be a link there with the videos that you can see that Jason's talking about here.
Yeah, so the idea was you can see it. You can see it, and sometimes you actually feel it, that moment when the kid goes, whoa. Yeah. Like, and it's not whoa, like
their mind explodes. It's like, hey, whoa, that's possible.
Yeah, it's not a whoa, he found my card magic trick, whoa. Yeah. It's whoa, my mind just got blown because I just learned what was possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's no tricks in the Festivore labs.
Right.
Because you're the one doing the experiment. It's just I formatted the experiment in the way you would see a magic trick.
Now, you mentioned Comic-Con. What is it that you're involved with Comic-Con?
Oh, so because of the success of the Impossible Science Initiative in the science centers, and because of the Flea Science Center being such an iconic member of the community in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
the mothership of all Comic-Cons, the Comic-Con International's conferences in San Diego. And we spoke to each other about what they were doing with Comic-Con HQ, their headquarters, their new digital platform premium service. And they asked me, would I be interested in turning Impossible Science into their new educational series?
Mm-hmm.
WonderFirst became the production company. So it's just a partnership between WonderFirst and Comic-Con HQ.
Mm-hmm.
In this series that we've written in, I brought in 10 impossible topics from animation, invisibility, mind control, animation, but also artificial intelligence, bionics, and when I was talking about science fiction, anything
yeah.
science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And we show not only what's going on at the fleet in my office and my little workshop, but what would it look like if we're available today as I run around Balboa Park and show an example of this technology? What would happen if somebody gave you a bionic strength right now?
Yeah, yeah.
What would it happen if something were to turn invisible right before your very eyes right now? And once your mind, wouldn't it be
right.
cool if somebody could read your mind right now? And then you follow it up with, well, it is possible, and this is the company that figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we flew around the country, and we interviewed all the scientists and the engineers and what they've done in adaptive camouflage, EEG headsets. We got NASA SpaceWorks. I got Greg Corrado, the co-founder of Google Brain, to talk about the artificial mm-hmm. intelligence program of Google. We've got USC involved with their virtual human lab. We got everybody. Everybody
wow.
found. Yeah, we have adaptive camouflage, University of Rochester's cloaking device. We got to see the invisible
mm-hmm.
cloaking. We got to try to see the invisible
cloaking. I was going to say, you actually saw something? It was invisible? Okay.
It's pretty amazing. And yeah. We were there the day before they released the omnidirectional digital cloaking. And so we got to see
mm-hmm.
it. And that
mm-hmm.
was, and we showed the science about how that works.
Yeah.
So it's not a normal magic show. It's a science show that happens to have magic in it.
Now, are the people in Comic-Con really digging that, or it's like, you know, well, that doesn't have anything to do with comics, or did they?
I mean, anybody who's ever seen a science fiction and says, "Man, I wish I could move at that speed."
Yeah.
And then we talk about we went and met up with Hyperloop, the CEO of Hyperloop Transportation Technologies, to see how close they are to letting everybody travel at the speed of sound,
mm-hmm.
and. I think everybody's excited about the future of that.
Oh, sure.
These are the 10 companies or individuals that are bringing science fiction to life. So
mm-hmm.
I don't think you have to be a Comic-Con follower to be excited about that type of future.
Yeah.
But the response has been fantastic. Comic-Con HQ released the first episode on YouTube for free. But if you want to see the other 9, there you have to subscribe. But I think you can sign up for free too. So you can
okay.
sign up. And right now, we still have like 3 or 4 more airing coming out. They come out once a week. So you can sign up. You can see all of them because they're up there like Netflix or Hulu. They're up there just You could binge watch all of them and learn.
Get your mind. What are they called? So if you look on Netflix, what are you looking for again?
Oh, no, it's Comic-Con HQ is its own platform.
Oh, HQ, sorry. Okay.
You could go on, and I think I've seen advertisements on various platforms, but it's definitely called Impossible Science, and I'm sure you could look it up. You can definitely go to Comic-Con HQ and just go to links, but then the first one's awesome. It was about mind control. It's a headset that reads your brain activity, and then it gets Bluetooth to a remote control of something else, and control things by thinking about it.
Wow, that's pretty cool. It's more than pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Every episode's like that. You're like, wait, that's actually possible. And it again, same mission statement. It's just that Comic-Con International's Impossible Science. It's more like the 18 and above age because we don't explain the basics of computer science when we have to get into artificial intelligence. We're not gearing this one towards kids.
Right.
But the topics is the same. The mission is the same. But everybody gets their mind blown by what is possible.
So are you speaking in a group kind of like the rest of the panel discussions during Comic-Con, or is it a...
I was on one of the panels this last year speaking of the direction of education and science fiction and... why it's so vital we combine those two with Comic-Con HQ. And Comic-Con has been so supportive of this craziness that I'm up to let me just have 10 episodes and just say, go show us what's possible.
Yeah.
And the Fleet Science Center's on board and that's grown dramatically. So, and this has all gone down in the last 10 months.
Wow. It's exciting. Yeah. Moving at light speed almost, huh?
The last 10 months, we went from one location to four.
Yeah.
We did festivals with the cities and labs with the cities. We've done 10 episodes and filmed them and pre-production and post, and they're airing now.
Mm-hmm.
That's all this year. And then I've been doing my keynotes on top of that for trying to get more states and more science centers involved.
Right.
By the way, anybody listening who's involved with science centers around wherever, contact me. I'd be happy to help.
Because, how can they reach you?
You can go to any of the social media platforms, or you can just go to jasonlatimer.com and click contact and write me an email. I try to get through them as fast as I can with everyone. But if you really just put in the heading, this science center wants you,
you'll be sure and click it, open it.
Call me and say you need to read this email.
Yeah. All right. Well, I tell you what, as we start to wrap up, a couple of things. One is, off the top of your head, is there some comment or compliment that you have received, whether from a child, a teacher, an administrator, or somebody, is there somebody whose life you feel like you've changed or touched? I mean, they've come to you and maybe, or just an emotion that you have seen in the eyes of somebody. I mean, what pops to mind that someone has said, this has changed my life, that has made you say this has all been worthwhile?
Well, there's a couple of the kids from who started the program in the very beginning. We're trying to see those seeds grow up now. We're trying to see those seeds that we've been planting.
Right.
Starting to take fruition. So I get to see the impact it's having with kids already. I'd like to see even more. But as far as I get it and I like that one rewarding feeling, it's very rewarding across the board.
Yeah, there's really no one incident.
There's no real one incident because I work till like 4 in the morning or I'll work till I'm just... I work myself pretty hard. I'm a pretty quiet guy. I'm a pretty quiet guy when it comes to like going out and doing something else.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm pretty much a workaholic. I guess that would be the term to put it. But on the same thing, I do it because it needs to be done.
Yeah.
And no one's going to be doing it. And
it's going to be, it starts with me.
Oh, it's true. Right. You know, my business manager, he says, if you don't work, it won't. It won't work. And it's one of those things where I get excited knowing that people are getting the concept really quickly.
Uh-huh.
That's when I know I've thought about it well enough that it's working. And that people get the concept, they embrace it, they're talking about it. Oh, I know. my favorite part I've learned so far is mm-hmm. that kids are talking about this stuff like it's like a class, yeah. but they don't know it's a class.
Okay.
And my favorite part is that I've tricked them into learning. And
because they think they're seeing a magic show and actually it was a class.
No, I watch these kids go, are you going to, like, because the Science Center is broken into different departments, levitation, okay. invisibility, whatever.
Yeah.
And kid goes, like, one guy goes, are you going to levitation? And he goes, oh, I did levitation last week. I'm doing invisibility tomorrow. And it sounds like they're going, it sounds like they're going to college. And they're like, I'm going to this course. And they're like, oh, I saw the refractive index one. Now I'm learning how to turn a syringe into a microscope.
Yeah,
and it's great. It's just awesome because they're talking about it like it's not a big deal,
mm-hmm.
and I've got parents laughing because the kids are coming up with these words to them, and they're like, I don't know what that word means, and yeah. I am gonna help you learn that because I need to know it too.
Yeah,
I almost need a separate workbook to translate what the kids already learned to the parent to keep the conversation going.
Right, right. Well, the final thing I was going to ask you as we wrap up over here then is what your magic word is. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So what is your philosophy of life? There were a lot of things you discussed over here that were important to you, but what is it that really drives you? It doesn't have to be a word. It can be a phrase, a mantra, something that you live by.
Oh, it's wonder changes the world.
It's fantastic. Wonder changes the world.
That's the only thing we've ever been able to prove.
Yeah.
And that when you get into an analogy or one I always go to, but it works for anything. Flight was impossible until someone asked a question about lift.
Mm-hmm.
And so how would we know what we don't know? And so how would we know what is possible? And the answer is we don't. It's a game without a rule book.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so that's why. Wonder changes the world.
That's great. Well, you are certainly changing the world, and I appreciate you being a guest over here on The Magic Word here this week.
Oh, thank you so much, Scott. Thank you so much for having me.
Glad you were here, and I'm going to keep my eye on you also, because I think it's important to kind of do a follow-up from time to time and give us an update and let us know what's going on.
We're going to have a few more big announcements. I'm going to take some time off for myself with my, I haven't seen my family forever.
Yeah.
We're going to go, I'm going to take a few trips pretty soon and then, but we'll start back up at the beginning of next year. And, I have some really big announcements coming this, first quarter of next year because
good.
Something I've been working on for years on the side. So
good. Well, then we will follow up with you then. And so until then, that was Jason Latimer. And for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. Well, thank you, Jason. I appreciate you being a guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. You are always entertaining and always very energetic, and it's great to hear from you and the projects that you are working on, and I wish you nothing but the best. And for those of you who are listening and happen to be in the Southern California area, be sure to stop by the museum in order to see what he's got going on. I think it sounds like you'll be pretty impressed. And I also want to thank my sponsor for this week, Chris Stoltz, for promoting his book, Hiding in the Shadows, Black Art for the Stage. And be sure to pick up that special Black Friday deal he's got for the Black Art book. Seems only appropriate, I guess, by going to blackartbook.com, and you can find out more information and order your copy and get a 15% Black Friday deal. Check it out, but don't be late, and get it today. Well, let's take a little time out here for a couple of product reviews from Murphy's Magic Supplies. First up, we will pick up kind of where we left off last week with another product by Chris Philpott. Chris has presented the trick called 100 Monkeys a while back, which was featured on America's Got Talent, and it is a really great trick. I have purchased that and had used that in my shows, both at the restaurant. I've used it in my stage shows. I've used it in my parlor shows, and it's a fun thing. For those of you who are not familiar with it, basically it's something in which that when you read it up close, that the person sees one thing, and those who are seeing it from a distance see something completely different. There are a couple of
issues with this, and that is that it has mainly to do a lot with the light, whether it's going to be dim or medium or a bright light, and so you need to make sure that you're going to be having the right light sensitivity, or I should say the right wording that will work for the light sensitivity in order for that to work. And then also to make sure that people are going to be able to have good enough eyesight, you know, then to see and to read that. Again, the one of the issues has been that perhaps you may have switched or the wording or something with 100 monkeys. That's sometimes what I'm thinking is that if I show this and I turn around, they think somehow or another I did some sort of a switch. Well, he has kind of solved that problem with a new trick called Narcissus. And Chris has developed this with several different routines, which are all really great. And I don't know that I have one favorite over the other, but particularly the idea is that you hand the card to a volunteer. They hold it rather than you holding onto it and letting them read it. They read it, and then they turn it around, and you take a picture with their phone or someone's phone who is in the group if you're doing it in an improvisational way. You take the picture, and then once that you do, then you have them again read the piece of paper or the card, and they're seeing one thing, and then you look at the picture. The cool thing about this is, okay, yeah, from a distance, it still looks like what you said. And then you start to zoom in with your fingers on your smartphone device or iPad or whatever. And as you do, then it becomes more clear, and you're seeing something completely different through the camera lens than you do through your optical nerves in your eyes. So it is something that the people do themselves. I mean, you say zoom in, you can start to zoom in for them, and they'll take it the rest of the way in, and you can see the reactions on the video that Chris has as to how people are freaked out by this. And the cool thing is, of course, they've got this that they can show other friends, and it's a trick that they carry with them, not just a memory, but it's a physical thing that they can carry. And with the instructional DVD, which is about an hour and a half, comes an additional DVD, which has the JPEG files for a lot of additional words, and you can print them out to whatever size. If you want them index card size, or you want them even larger for stage size, if you want them to have them in some sort of a strip, like a banner, that they can hold, and I say a banner, a small banner, something that would be maybe 3 inches tall and about 11 inches wide or something like that, that they can hold. And again, they hold that, and then you take a picture of them with your phone. And it has a different wording that they read versus what the phone is seeing, the lens of the phone. And it is a very cool trick and is a nice little souvenir to give away. Also included in the second DVD are not only all these JPEGs, but also there's a PDF that will, if you want to read it online, or you can print it out if you want. It's about 65, 66 pages and includes all the routines and a few more things that he had talked about in the instructional DVD. Very cool trick. A great thing if you want to do in an improvisational situation, or if you want to do this on stage and you can borrow the volunteer's camera and then they can show that around to people afterwards, or even like in a cocktail party, if you're doing some strolling or something, you can pull these index cards out, you can hand it to some people, they can take it, then you stroll around, and then by the end of the evening, all these people are showing each other the different things they had on their phone, because again, there are different routines, there are different words, there are different phrases. For an example, I will see my future, or I will become my father, something like that, that it has a dual way of seeing it. Very cool. Recommend it. Again, Chris Philpott, very clever guy, a lot of good stuff that he puts out. And this is one I recommend, as well as the 100 Monkeys. Again, with the only provision is that you need to make sure that you check your lighting situation before you actually perform it, so this way that it works perfectly for you first time and every time. And it's called Narcissus by Chris Philpott. Next up is a trick from themagicestate.com and my good friend Cody Fisher. Cody Fisher is an excellent performer living up the road here in Austin, Texas, and I have recommended him for some other shows, and we have traded off in the past. An excellent corporate magician and knows how to entertain. And he brings that to bear with this new trick that is called Deal Sealer. And it's one that I recommend, but I want this to be clear from the beginning that what you get with this is a gimmick card. Now, actually you get two gimmick cards, and there's nothing new about the gimmick cards. In fact, that you can purchase them anywhere, and they have been around for a long time. It is usually part of a packet of cards where there are a bunch of other kind of comedy or gimmick cards in the deck. But what he does with this is something that is pretty incredible. So what you're purchasing here is not so much the card, because in fact he suggests that you might even give out the card, and if you do, then you got to go buy another one, and you're not going to have to go back and repurchase this whole thing, because essentially what you're buying here is his intellectual property. And I think that that's something that is interesting today, that what we're seeing, for an example, through lectures like At the Table Lectures by Murphy's, that you are not necessarily buying a trick, but you're buying ideas from the lecturer, and so they are intellectual property that you're paying for the rights to perform or to make that trick or whatever. This is something that perhaps could have been as part of a lecture, and then he could have sold just the trick itself, or I should say just the gimmick cards with this, and then you would have understood what to do it with it. But what you get is a link to a video online that gives all the details. It's a little less than a half hour as far as the total running time for the video, but he goes into a lot of details as to what makes this a great trick. And as soon as you open up the package and you look at it, you're going to say, I paid this much for just this gimmick card. And it's not really a gimmick card. It's just it's a printed card. Again, it's a classic card that you probably already own one and have it in your drawer someplace. But he says, yes, you are getting that, but you're getting this routine. And also, I recall seeing Mike Rogers, a great trade show magician of yesteryear, who had performed this at a trade show. It was the first time I had watched him perform, and he made this into about an 8-minute or 10-minute performance and sales pitch for the product. And then after he finished, he looked at me, he drew a big audience, and they looked at me and he said, that's how you sell that trick. And actually Cody talks about that, this card, in the context of a trade show, and how easy it is to, and how natural it is to talk about the in a trade show environment about how that you would use this card. Well, it's hard to kind of describe this without giving away what this card is. But the idea is, he says, there are certain things, again, that lend themselves to a trade show environment that you really have to think about how to do this properly then for a corporate environment. And he has given it a lot of thought. And so he puts this into a different level that is very entertaining. The video shows him entertaining a group of young people at a bar, or looks like at a cocktail party or some reception or something. And I like at the end some of the tips that he gives as well, because he says he uses this as a closer. That's why it's called the deal sealer, because he said this is when I get the $100 handshake, whenever they thank me for coming and they hand me a nice tip at the end. And what he says is, and I agree with this, that it's not necessarily the closer of your act or your performance. If you're doing something in a strolling situation or a close-up situation, that it wouldn't be a closer for that. It's more of something, I think, when you come back to thank your host, to say, I appreciate you booking me for this venue. I had a great time, and just kind of chat, and that they usually kind of say, well, have you got something else? Or that you could say, before I leave, let me just show you one more thing, and you leave them with this trick, which it kind of goes over the top. It's what I would call a kicker, where that you would have, like in cups and balls, where that you have different things that come out from underneath the cups, and at the end you have something else that's bigger, which would be your kicker. Same thing here. This would be the kicker that they would remember. And it is a cool idea, and the psychology that he uses, and the wonder words, I would call them, that he uses in order to sell this trick, is really the intellectual property that you're paying for when you purchase this. It's a great idea, and something that I know that I will use, and I think it's a cool presentation. What can I say? I think that you will enjoy it. It's just, again, know that when you're receiving it, that you're not paying just for the print it or the gimmick card. You're paying for that intellectual property. You're paying for the rights to perform this and understanding the thinking that Cody has put into all this, because it's something that does show that it's taken a lot of years of preparation towards something just like he has in order to make it work perfectly to elicit the kind of reaction that he gets, and I know that you will get when you buy and use Deal Sealer by Cody Fisher. Well, there you go. Two tricks for Thursday. And if you are interested in finding out more about those, then go to themagicwordpodcast.com. Then you can click on the Magic Store and you will find a link there for these tricks and others that are offered from Murphy's Magic Supplies. They are available, of course, here through the Magic Word Podcast or through your favorite dealer. But hey, shouldn't I be your favorite dealer? I'm going to leave you here so this way that you can enjoy the rest of your Thanksgiving and into the next week until we have another podcast next week, which I am excited about. I don't want to tip too much, but I will tell you that it is episode 333, which is only half evil. So who do you think I might have as a guest? I think it's going to be a lot of fun and you're going to enjoy this guy. So until next week, stay well, get booked. Give thanks, and remember that wonder changes the world. This is Scotty out.